Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
Well, last week we talked with David Pinto about his Academy of Music for the Blind. This week we'll be talking with a young musician who was a student of David's.
Rachel Flowers is a talented young blind musician, and we will speak with her and her mother, Jeannie Flowers, about how Rachel learned to play the myriad of instruments she's mastered, including participating in her school's marching band. We'll also speak with her about how she currently performs, composes, arranges, and otherwise shares her music with others. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Jeannie Flowers. Maybe, Jeannie, do you have a tip for a parent of a talented blind musician?
That is hard to answer because all I've ever done is just try to see what she needs and do my best to get her what she needs. I've been very fortunate that other people have come into our lives who have been able to provide help for her where I couldn't. I was able to help her to a point, like with technical issues with her computer and with sonar, but I could only go so far because that wasn't my field. And we had someone come into our lives, Brian, who was an expert on that, and he helps her with that now. So I would say don't be afraid to seek out help. I think maybe that's my advice. You know, you can't do everything yourself.
Yeah.
As much as you may want to, you can't.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to look for help. And there are people out there who are experts in whatever it is your kid needs.
Mm-hmm. That is just perfect.
That's great advice on everything.
Yeah. And Brian's been helping me with a lot of things. So
Yeah, we had David show up who helped her with so much in her computer things getting started and, gosh, even creating the software. Where would she be without that? I don't know.
Yeah.
As a parent, we all want the best for our children, and we all often get into situations where our child is interested in some topic that maybe we're not knowledgeable about. And whether or not that has to do with the child having a disability, or it's just, you know, our kid wanted to play soccer and we couldn't coach him because neither of us knew much about playing soccer. There's always times when a parent can benefit from getting input and advice and other assistance from other people. And especially if your child is in a situation that you as a parent have never been in. Jeannie seems to have figured out how to get the help that she needed in raising Rachel to be the wonderful young woman she's become. That was a small clip of Rachel playing Shoreline, a piece that she wrote, performed, and produced. And we'll hear more about that later in the show. But let's start by meeting Rachel and Jeannie Flowers.
Hi, I'm Rachel Flowers.
I'm her mom. I'm Jeannie Flowers.
We're here today to talk mostly with Rachel about her musical experiences. But like most of our listeners, I gather you've got a visual impairment?
I'm blind.
And you've been blind since birth, Rachel?
Yeah.
And what was the cause of that?
Retinopathy of prematurity.
So you don't see anything?
No.
So you obviously use Braille and screen readers and all those kinds of tools?
Yeah.
So I know you've been a student at the Academy of Music for the Blind with David Pinto, who we spoke with on the previous week's show.
Mm-hmm.
For your regular academic weekly program, did you go to a regular public school or a school for the blind?
I went to public schools.
Well, let's get on with the show so we can learn about her musical experiences.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is how Rachel learned to play and produce music and her experiences doing that.
So when did you first get involved in music, Rachel?
I don't really remember. I just remember when I was very little, my mom and dad would play me a lot of music. I would listen to lots of music. And when I was like two, I started playing piano.
Well, so you've been playing a long time. Are both of your parents musical?
Yeah.
What do they play?
Mom and Dad, they both play some piano and guitar and they write songs.
Oh, great.
So you play a number of instruments, right, Rachel?
Yeah, lots of different instruments. Piano, flute, guitar, a little saxophone. It's been a while since I played saxophone, but...
And I've seen on the web you play pipe organ as well?
Yeah, and a Hammond organ.
Yeah, she plays ukulele. She plays bass. Basically anything with strings or with keys, she can play it.
Wow, that's great. Well, I guess once you learn one instrument pretty well, it's a lot easier to pick up the second instrument. Is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty easy for me. Mm-hmm.
When did you first start taking formal lessons?
You want me to pipe in, Rach?
Yeah, I might need some help.
Yeah, she doesn't even remember. She was so little. She started taking lessons when she was 4 years old. I took her to the Southern California Conservatory of Music, which is a mouthful. And she started taking lessons there with Grant Horrocks.
So did piano and scales and all that. And then David Pinto later on with computers. And then later on it was Richard Tesh with reading Braille music. And then later on it was Toby Kaplan Stonefield with the classical flute.
How did you learn your music early on when you were four? Did you know Braille music or did you primarily play by ear?
I mainly learned a lot by ear, not a lot in Braille. Flute music was easier in Braille to read.
Because it's just a single line instead of all the fingers playing at once, I guess.
Yeah. Well, there's some signs in Braille music for the piano, like an interval. Like if you want to play two notes, there's their own sign for different intervals, and it's really challenging for me.
You know, I went to a school for the blind when I was in elementary school, and they started teaching us Braille music, and I found it very difficult, and I never really used it. Do you make a lot of use of Braille music?
Not a lot, but sometimes it's interesting to sort of read what the written notes are like.
Well, I guess it can be quite helpful. I always admired people who could sight read really well because you could just pick up a piece of music and learn it. You know, when I was young and blind, I had to learn a measure at a time. And by the time I learned the music, I was kind of bored of it.
Yeah.
This sounds familiar, right, Rachel?
Yeah.
And often when you're a kid, they train you classically, which means you really have to know it note for note. You can't make up your own arrangements and all. So how did you find that difficult? How did that work with your teachers?
It was a little hard because I'm used to wanting to interpret things, and it was really different.
Got frustrating for you sometimes, didn't
it? Yeah.
It was mainly in her classical flute lessons where she used the Braille music, and they're doing competitions. They're very picky. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, they want to hear that note for note, don't they? They don't want to hear any variations from what you're supposed to be playing, I guess.
Right. And other flutists who'd be in the same competitions, of course, they're there reading the music, and Rachel had to memorize everything.
Yeah.
So that much more difficult, and having to remember all of the articulations and everything and play it all by memory and try and be better than the ones who have the music in front of them.
Right. Yeah. Did you find it difficult with some of your early teachers in terms of them not having taught a blind student before? And how did they deal with that?
I don't really know.
She really was fortunate, unfortunate in some ways. She didn't have music in school until seventh grade.
And E.L. Green.
Yeah. And so she had her middle school teacher and then her high school band teacher. Both of them, neither of them had taught blind students before, but both of them were just ready to and willing to jump in. They were willing to do whatever needed to be done to, you know, integrate her fully into the bands.
Yeah, it was Miss Rotenberg.
Yeah.
And Kyle Norwood.
Yeah, so you know, why don't you talk a minute about how, like, with Miss Rotenberg, where she placed you in the flute section and how you could tell when to start and stop and things like that?
I don't remember the whole thing, but I do remember one of my aides, Miss Bunny. She helped me a lot with a lot of things. Like, she would come up with certain, I can't get the word.
first off, her band teacher put her right in the front in the middle. And couldn't you like hear her take a big breath before she would start?
Yeah, I'd take a big breath.
Yeah, so she had audible signals that she went by a lot of times. And then her aide sat next to her in middle school. And once she got into high school, Rachel was on her own and did fine. But her aide worked out a system where she would touch Rachel's back and move her hand certain ways to let her know if there was a crescendo, if there was a decrescendo.
Crescendo is going up and then going down. It's getting softer and then like some sort of a line for a cutoff and then like tapping to be on the beat and then like holding a certain position to get the instrument set up, get the instrument ready before you play. And like when you have it one position and then the director puts it close to you.
And then in high school was when they had marching band.
Oh, yeah.
And Mr. Norwood wasn't at all worried about you being in marching band. He'd have another student, somebody who wasn't playing, would be her sighted guide.
My sighted guide.
Would just, you know, she would march with the rest of the band.
Oh, that's great. So in the band, you had your own personal conductor at times and then your own guide to keep you in line. That must have worked out really well.
Yeah, it did.
You know, it is so important in every field to have some teachers who believe in you and who are willing to work with you. And, you know, the fact that your marching band teacher was willing to have an extra student in position to let you do what you do well and make it possible, that's so wonderful.
Yeah, he wanted her to have the same experience as everyone else. I'm sorry, go ahead, Rach.
Yeah, and sometimes it was hard sometimes because it would be really cold or it would be like raining and like.
Hey, at least you don't play the tuba. Those poor people have a lot of brass on their lips when it's cold.
And played at the field shows and at the games, the ball games.
Yeah, and the field shows, when it was field show season, like for the competitions for the field shows, because she couldn't really move in formation with a sighted guide dragging her around, she played mallets in the pit.
I played the xylophone and the vibraphone and the cymbals. And marimba? I didn't play marimba.
You didn't play marimba?
I don't think. Or maybe I did. I don't remember now. But but it was fun playing the mallets. And,
wow, that is great.
Yeah.
So when you went to Dave Pinto's school, can you tell us a little bit about that? He described his program on our show last week a bit, and I thought maybe we could hear a little bit about the program from your experience.
The things that I remember that I enjoyed doing was like we would do songs together with some of the students. We were working on like recording with the microphone and multi-tracking and
practical kind of stuff, huh?
So he taught you a little bit about sonar and working with computers to do audio production?
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a sonar expert?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. So you do your own mixes and your own recordings?
Mm-hmm.
Tell people about that, how that works out. A lot of people don't know what sonar is and how this multi-track recording happens.
Sonar, well, the important thing is the cake talking scripts.
They make sonar accessible for a visually impaired person.
Yeah, and it's with JAWS. JAWS is the screen reader on the PC. I'm not sure what Mac uses, but PC JAWS is the speech program that you have to buy to get it. But the Cake Talking Scripts is what makes sonar accessible, and I have the latest version. And I could go and do mixes and audio with, like I could, if I want to increase reverb, I could go into the effects bin and I just use the arrow keys and I just do it all on the QWERTY keyboard.
So you can make a recording sound like what you want. How do you originally do the recording though? You record on one track, one instrument, and then you record another instrument on another track? What is the process like?
Yeah, I would do one track at a time.
So you'd put down your piano track and then what happens? What might you add?
Maybe a guitar track, bass track, or sometimes I would start with the drum track.
To have the tempo correct, I guess. So you do that all in sonar, and then you play back the tracks you recorded while you put on additional tracks so they're all in sync?
Yeah.
That must be a lot of fun. Does it take a lot of time?
It depends on how hard the music is. Usually I get it down pretty quick.
She's like, pretty fast.
Yeah, I'm pretty fast.
That's a complicated program to run. I'm impressed.
Mm-hmm. Well, she started working in sonar when David was at SCCM. When Rachel was about 5 was when we met David.
That was Cakewalk.
Okay, but that's what became sonar, right?
It's
basically the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that was when David had basically developing the software, and he had a class of students. He got somebody to donate a bunch of computers and had all these kids in there all learning Cakewalk together.
Yeah.
And Rachel was one of those kids, so she was one of the first to use it. So she's been doing it for a long time. She has a lot of practice.
Oh, that's great. Well, you're actually being recorded with sonar right now through our mixer.
Wow. That's wild.
So at what point in your musical history did you actually start learning music theory and learning how to put together your own musical pieces?
Well, I remember learning music theory during the flute things, but how to put my own pieces, I think I already had that after from playing a lot of Mozart and listening to a lot of classical music that I heard a long time ago, and then some jazz and then the progressive rock. And so I kind of got it from just listening to a whole bunch of music that I enjoy.
So you kind of learned by example.
Mm-hmm.
What genre would you say most of your compositions are?
It kind of combines different genres together. Most of my music it has some jazz things to it, but it also has kind of a classical structure to it. And then there are some stuff that's more like progressive rock with guitars and organ. But most of it is very orchestral. I've been getting into a lot of orchestral music and listening to like movies and with the audio description, with the film score in the background. And I've been listening to a whole bunch of stuff lately. So I remember a little while ago listening to a lot of Miles Davis and then some Frank Zappa, just a whole bunch of things.
So you've kind of integrated a lot of your listening experiences into the kind of music that you're writing these days.
Mm-hmm. Most of my music, I already know what it's going to sound like. And then the jazz stuff, I've been listening to a lot of Taylor Eikstee and Herbie Hancock and Esperanza Spalding, a lot of artists. And then the Bad Plus, which combines, they're like a trio that combines like elements of pop, avant-garde, and just a whole bunch of things. It's all in a trio, just acoustic piano, bass, and drums. And so those things are... It was really neat just listening to that, and I started getting into a whole bunch of things.
And do you put together most of your music yourself then? I mean, you archive it by recording it in sonar?
Mm-hmm. I do it all in sonar, and I use a lot of software programs.
And how do you share your music with other people if you want some other people to participate in a, you know, a trio or a quartet with you? A lot of other musicians, you know, they're sighted and they want to read some music to be able to play along with you. How do you get it into a format to be able to share with others? Or do they just listen to your piece and know what to do?
Usually I just send them an MP3 of what I did, but I don't know how to do like a chart. It's hard for me to find the players that really would get the right sound for my music, because my music, it's not traditional jazz and it's not structured like traditional jazz. It's sort of my own thing, and I'm not sure how that's going to work out with just the recording, or if the players will have time to listen to the recording and really get the sound. And I don't know how the chart, because a lot of stuff I record in audio and I don't do a lot of software. So in soft synth you could do scores and stuff, but audio, it's just all played. And
so you have to collaborate with musicians who are good enough and have good enough ears to be able to hear what you're doing and know how to fit into that arrangement.
Mm-hmm. Right. A couple of the people that she's played with have written charts for her. One of the guitar players that she works with has charted a couple of your tunes, hasn't he? Just
yeah.
To follow. And then she did a show recently, what was that, in January? Mm. With Taylor?
Yeah, Taylor Eikstee, one of my favorite jazz pianists.
Yeah, and he had her send him one of her tunes, and he charted it for his band to play with her.
It was fun.
What instrument were you playing in that?
I was playing keyboards.
Uh-huh.
And I was singing.
Yeah. Taylor said that charting Rachel's piece kicked his ass. I don't know if you can say that on the
I don't know. We've never bleeped anything on this show yet.
It was really a challenge for him to do it, but he did it, and they were doing it when in their style, and it was pretty cool what they were doing with it.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, you always learn playing with other musicians, especially people, you know, who have more experience than you, right?
Yeah.
I gather he's not the only famous person you've had an opportunity to collaborate with.
I just played with Dweezil Zappa, the son of Frank Zappa, with the Zappa Plays Zappa in Las Vegas. That was a fun show.
That is really cool.
Yeah, so you must have had a packed house for that. Are you used to playing for such large audiences?
I did a solo piano thing at Libby Bowl for a film documentary that we're working on called Hearing is Believing. But that was kind of a different crowd. The Zappa thing was more like, it was a very energetic, I can't get the word, like
they were loud.
Rachel, Rachel, Rachel.
Oh, that must have been such a kick.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Distracting, but exciting.
Mm-hmm. It was so much fun. We just had a really short rehearsal, and we're just going through the songs that I was playing on, and we had earpieces, so I had an earpiece on and
in-ear monitor.
Yeah. And it was really cool. Just one quick rehearsal. And then when we did the show, Montana was the fun piece. That was one of my favorites. And that's probably the biggest one on YouTube. That was so much fun because Dweezil and I were playing solos at each other and
trading guitar riffs.
And then we did a vocal thing, which we didn't really, it just happened right there during the show. And it was pretty neat.
Oh, that is fun when stuff like that happens, huh? When it's all spontaneous.
Yeah, that was fun.
We, of course, had to go to YouTube and find a recording of this performance. It is mesmerizing. And if you don't want to watch the entire song, Rachel does a blazing hot guitar solo starting about 2 minutes in, followed by where she's trading fours with Dweezil Zappa. And then about 6 minutes in, she begins her vocal solo, which is just as good as the guitar solo.
So it sounds like you've accomplished quite a lot musically in 21 years. What are your long-term goals and aspirations?
I'd like to be able to have some of my music played by an orchestra.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you want to perform or mostly write someday?
Both.
Uh-huh.
That also wasn't our regular breaker tune. That was the very end of Shoreline, and here is Rachel describing how she came to write that tune.
One of the songs I'd like to have played a little excerpt is Shoreline, which I written, I think, last year.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to this place with the Santa Barbara Braille Institute and the Young Adults Program, and on Fridays in the afternoon, we would go to this place, Shoreline Park in Santa Barbara, and it was really nice. And this one particular time, I would just remember the feel of the breeze and the sun and the ocean, and I was just sort of imagining what it would sound like. And I was hearing this little piece of music as I was walking, feeling the sun and the breeze and the smell of the ocean and all those things, and I immediately heard this music, sort of what it would sound like.
And then you developed it into a real piece, and that was your memory of that experience, huh?
Yeah.
Great. Mm-hmm. How neat.
Now for this week's final item, how you can learn more about Rachel and how you can hear more of her music. This documentary, you mentioned it earlier. Is this about you, or is this you're a piece of a bigger story, or what?
It's mainly about me.
Cool.
Yeah.
And do you have an idea of when it's likely to come out?
Projected release is in 2016.
Next.
They're still filming, and he's going to start editing pretty soon. the Zappa, plays Zappa performance was kind of a major filming experience. And he just has a couple other things that he wants to pick up, but he wants to start editing. And then once we get the orchestral sequence done, he'll add that in later. He's working towards getting a working cut and having it released in 2016.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And can you remind our listeners of the proposed title of this documentary?
Hearing is Believing, like Seeing is Believing.
Yeah, I think his full title is Rachel Flowers, Hearing is Believing. And there's a website for that, which is rachelflowersfilm.com.
Oh, so people ought to watch out for that. And if they keep track of that website, they'll know when it comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've been talking about your music, but I would imagine at this point, people would want to hear more of your music. Can you give the address of your website?
It's rachelflowersmusic.com.
And do you have a YouTube channel as well?
All her stuff is on my channel. But anyone can go into YouTube and search for Rachel Flowers, or my channel is 12 String Babe, which is kind of silly.
She plays the 12 string guitar. It's her favorite. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I understand there's also some of your music available on SoundCloud. Can you tell people how to access that and what's up there?
Most of it is mainly covers. There's one,
you have two originals.
Two originals. But most of them are all covers, like Frank Zappa. I do a lot of Frank Zappa covers and King Crimson, most like progressive rock.
And how do people find that?
It's soundcloud.com/RachelFlowers-1, because there was already another Rachel Flowers on there.
Isn't that always the way it is?
Yeah. But they can go search SoundCloud and they can find her there.
Okay. We actually have show notes associated with all these shows, and we'll put the real links in there so it makes it easy for people to find.
That'd be great.
And of course, that's where you'll be able to find those links, as well as a link to her YouTube video where she played with Dweezil Zappa and much more information. So go to the show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1523. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about a different kind of sonar, the Sonar GNU Linux project. Sonar GNU Linux is a version of the Linux operating system that has accessibility for people with many different types of disabilities built right into it. We'll speak with Jonathan Nadeau, its lead developer, about its many features and capabilities, about how and why it was developed, and about how you can get involved in further progress. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.